Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
So we're reading from chapter 14 of the seventh canto, The Ideal Family Life. I'll read the summary, chapter summary. This chapter describes the occupational duties of the householder according to the time, the country and the performer. When Yudhisthira Maharaj became very much inquisitive about the occupational duties for the householder, Narada Muni advised him that a Grihastha's first duty is to be fully dependent on Vasudeva, Krishna, and to try to satisfy him in all respects by executing one's prescribed devotional service. This devotional service will depend on the instructions of authorities and the association of devotees who are actually engaged in the devotional service. So, again, here we're seeing this mood that with bhakti, from the very beginning, during its execution and to the perfectional stage, it always depends upon the association and the guidance of the authoritative association of devotees. Even for grihasthas. So, the beginning of devotional service is shravanam or hearing. One must hear from the mouths of realized souls. So again, that point that bhakti begins from when we hear from devotees. In this way, the grihastha's attraction to his wife and children will gradually be reduced. As for the maintenance of his family, a grihastha, while earning what he requires for his living, must be very conscientious and must not undergo extraordinary endeavour simply to accumulate money and unnecessarily increase in material comforts. Although a grihastha should externally be very active in earning his livelihood, he should internally be situated as a fully self-realised person without attachment for material gains. His dealings with family members or friends should be performed simply to fulfil their purpose. One should not be extravagantly engaged in this way. Instructions from family members and society should be accepted superficially. But in essence, the grihastha should be engaged in occupational duties advised by the spiritual master and shastra. Specifically, a grihastha should engage in agricultural activities to earn money. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 18:44, Krishi Goraksha Vanijam, agriculture, cow protection and trade are special duties of grihasthas. If by chance or by the grace of the Lord more money comes, it should be properly engaged for the Krishna consciousness movement. One should not be eager to earn more money simply for sensual pleasure. A grihastha should always remember that one who is endeavouring to accumulate more money than necessary is to be considered a thief and is punishable by the laws of nature. A grihastha should be very much affectionate toward lower animals, birds and bees, treating them exactly like his own children. A grihastha should not indulge in killing animals or birds for sense gratification. He should provide the necessities of life even to the dogs and the lowest creatures, and should not exploit others for sense gratification. Factually, according to the instructions of Srimad Bhagavatam, every grihastha is a great communist who provides the means of living for everyone. Whatever a grihastha may possess, he should simply distribute to all living entities without discrimination. The best process is to distribute prasad. A grihastha should not be very much attached to his wife. He should engage even his own wife in serving a guest with all attention. Whatever money a grihastha accumulates, by the grace of God, he should spend in five activities, namely, worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead, receiving Vaishnavas and saintly persons, distributing prasad to the general public and to all living entities, offering prasad to his forefathers, and also offering prasad to his own self. Grihastha should always be ready to worship everyone as mentioned above. The Grihastha should not eat anything not offered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As is stated in Bhagavad Gita 3.13, Jagya Sistasyanaha Santo Muchante Sarvakula Vishad. The devotees of the Lord are released from all kinds of sin because they eat food that is offered first for sacrifice. The Grihastha should also visit the holy places of pilgrimage mentioned in the Puranas. In this way, he should fully engage in worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead for the benefit of his family, his society, his country, and humanity at large. Maharaj Yudhisthira inquired from Narada Muni, O my Lord, O great sage, kindly explain how we who are staying at home without knowledge of the goal of life may easily attain liberation according to the instructions of the Vedas. So we've heard about the Brahmachari, Vanaprastha and Sannyasi. Sort of Prabhupada's mentioning that these three ashrams are extremely important for fulfillment of the goal of life. And Narada Muni first described Brahmacharya, Vanaprastha and Sannyas because he wanted to stress that sex is not at all necessary. Although one who absolutely requires it is allowed to enter grihastha life or household life, which is also regulated by the Shastras and Guru. You know, Shishya, disciple, comes from the word sas, or sas meaning weapon, or to control. Generally, we first control people by rules and regulations. So that's, you know, sas also rules regulate, to regulate. If they can't be controlled, then we use weapons, other weapons. Actually, you know, the rules and regulations are the first weapon. You know, the law, that's the government's first weapon. Here is the law, obey it. That's the first weapon. If that's not obeyed, then other weapons are used. So, Shishya and Shastra, they're all coming from the same weapon or rule. So Shastra is like a weapon. They are also the rules, but the laws of God. And first weapon. And Shishya means one who is controlled or regulated by higher instructions. It's interesting, you know, because when we speak of, you know, we're taking Shishya or, you know, instruction from someone, we generally think it in terms of I might take it and I might not. You know, I'll ask a few questions, you know, if I like the answers, and I'll ask some more. So we take it like that. But actually, as you look at the meaning of Shishya, it's actually a person who's understood that they are to be regulated by proper authorities, just the same as, you know, there are citizens in the state and that they think, well, you know, I might follow the laws of the government, I might not. But gradually, you know, after when they may not, and there's punishment or the government uses other weapons to control them, then they realise, no, I don't have that. You know, actually, it's not a choice. I must, you know, be regulated. So here, this Shishya, the householder, and here the householder, of course, they generally, you know, there's more of a mood of independence, acting, but they're also, the first point, here is that here Yudhisthira is understanding that he's an emperor, you know, he's royalty. But still, he's also Grihastha. So even one is Grihastha and royalty, still that mood is there that, no, I must be regulated by the higher authorities. Must. Like that. You know? So he is asking. So he understood all of this. To be regulated by Shastra and Guru. Therefore, as a Grihastha, he presented himself as Griha Mudadi, one who is completely ignorant of the goal of life. So he is setting the perfect example of how Grihasthas should act. So we follow in the footsteps of Yudhisthira. Narada Muni replied, "My dear king, those who stay at home as householders must act to earn their livelihood. And instead of trying to enjoy the results of their work themselves, they should offer these results to Krishna, Vasudeva. How to satisfy Vasudeva in this life can be perfectly understood through the association of great devotees of the Lord." So, Narada Muni's first instruction. Coming in or out? Can they shut that door? Hare Krishna, Mataji?
Yes, Guru, please, sir.
Are they doing something next door? Do they know we're having class here?
I don't know.
Can you tell them?
Yeah.
Can you tell?
Yeah.
Because.
Yeah, sure. I'll tell them.
And shut the door. Yeah. Thank you. So the first instruction is that one learns to dedicate everything to Krishna through bhakti, but that can only be done through the association of the devotees. I was mentioning the other week, you know, one time Srila Prabhupada was asked that, you know, he was asked a question in India that, you know, for those who may not have a spiritual master, how do they, you know, what is their position on the path of bhakti? And Prabhupada said, without the guru, there is no bhakti. Another time, a devotee asked a question, not a devotee, you know, again in India, Hyderabad, asked a question of Prabhupada that Srila Prabhupada was speaking about Bhagavad Gita 1866, surrender to Krishna. That this is Krishna's instruction, that everything should be surrendered to him. And the question was asked if one is performing bhakti but has not surrendered to Krishna, you know, how does, you know, what is one's situation? Prabhupada said, without surrender, there is no bhakti. said that surrender that Krishna is asking is the beginning of bhakti. That when Krishna finishes the Bhagavad Gita and asks one to surrender, if someone says, I have faith in that statement, that's the beginning of bhakti. That faith, the Shraddha. I have faith. Why would one have faith in what Krishna says? Because they have associated with the devotee, and the devotee has, by the association of that devotee, a little dawning of faith will come. Without the association of devotees, there's no bhakti, there's no faith, there's no shraddha. And in the association of devotees, when that faith dawns that yes, I must surrender to Krishna, that's the beginning of bhakti. Bhakti begins after that point. There is no bhakti before that point. Whatever bhakti is before that point is, you know, someone is performing karma principally, or jnana, or stanga. There's a little bhakti to get some results from it, but it's, you know, principally they're doing karma. Bhakti means at the point where it's principally bhakti. Oh, this is, you know, what I should be doing, just bhakti. How do I do that? And then gradually we start to sift away all the karma and the jnana and just try to take the bhakti. So it must be done in the association and under the guidance of, you know. So, you know, it's one thing that, one of the discussions that we had today, one of the presentations, you know, there was a whole long conversation about bhakti, but at no stage was that mentioned, you know, which is one of the first things that needs to be understood, actually, that without the association of devotees, there's no entering into the mysteries of bhakti, there's no ability to understand bhakti, there is no bhakti, and the bhakti, and there's no proper direction in bhakti. You know, proper. But the tinges of bhakti that are there can be mixed with mental speculation or different things. And then, of course, you know, the tinges of bhakti that are there, without going through the devotees, Krishna doesn't necessarily accept it. Except that the fact that he says it, as they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. And therefore, you know, Krishna accepts anyone who's performing any of the Vedic processes, he accepts that. As they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. And they're following, because everyone follows my path in all respects. All the Vedas, you're all following my path. If you're following Karma Yoga, you're following me and you're surrendering to me. Why are you surrendering unto me? Because you're accepting the Vedas which are coming from the Lord. But it's indirect. It's an indirect surrender. So just like someone has a business, so they pay the taxes to the government. They're not necessarily working for the government's interests. They're not necessarily, you know, anything. They're doing their own business, but they must pay their taxes. So, you know, in many different aspects of Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, whether you like it or not, they must chant the mantras to offer everything to Krishna, but it's not particularly our business why we're doing the, you know, sacrificing Karma Yoga or Jnana Yoga or you know, what have you. So what here, the first thing is that under the guidance of a bona fide Vaishnava guru, one understands that whatever we are doing, the first business is to fix the consciousness that this is not for me, it's for Krishna. And one who has faith that yes, by offering everything to Krishna, everything is done, that is the beginning of bhakti. And the faith to do that comes from the association of devotee, and then that bhakti must be Because we naturally have a tendency to do things according to our different, you know, conditioning, according to the modes of material nature. Therefore, the guru can detect that and will, in fact, guide us so that, you know, we don't make mistakes on the path. Therefore, in the 17th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna asks the question to Krishna, you know, what about those who, what's his question? He says, it's a very, very interesting question that, he says, what is the situation of one who does not follow the principles of scripture, but worships according to his own imagination? Is he in goodness, passion, or ignorance? So that's the danger, that if we don't follow the scriptures under the expert guidance of the devotee who knows that the purpose of the scriptures is to serve the personality of Godhead, what happens is that we're worshipping even Krishna, but we're worshipping under goodness, passion, or ignorance. That's Krishna's conclusion. Whereas if we actually follow the scriptures, as given by the knowers of the scriptures, who are the Vaishnavas, it takes us from the platform of the doing bhakti, where there's a predominance of the modes of material nature still prevalent, to the point where we're doing bhakti, which is actually transcendental and it's the real thing. So this is the first thing. Otherwise, this is the first instruction by Narada Muni. Otherwise, everything else after this point would not be done properly. The Prabhupada says, here, saintly persons are generally known as munis, or thoughtful philosophers concerned with transcendental subject matters, and Mahamuni refers to those who have not only thoroughly studied the goal of life, but who are actually engaged in satisfying the Supreme Personality of Godhead Vasudeva. These persons are known as devotees. Unless one associates with devotees, one cannot learn the science of Vasudevapana, or dedicating one's life to Vasudeva, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In India, the principles of this science were followed strictly. Even 50 years ago, I saw that in the villages of Bengal and the suburbs of Calcutta, people engaged in hearing Srimad Bhagavatam daily when all their activities ended, or at least in the evening before going to bed. Everyone would hear the Bhagavatam. Bhagavat classes were held in every village, and thus people had the advantage of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, which describes everything about the aim of life, liberation or salvation. This will be clearly explained in these next verses. So a Grihastha must engage again and again with saintly persons, and with great respect he must hear the nectar of the activities of the Supreme Lord and his incarnations, as these are described in Srimad Bhagavatam and other Puranas. Thus one should gradually become detached from affection for his wife and children, exactly like a man awakening from a dream. And Prabhupada says that this Krishna consciousness movement has been established to give Grihasthas all over the world an opportunity to hear Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita specifically. So this simply by hearing, by attending lectures in the different centers of the Krishna consciousness movement, where topics of Krishna from Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam are discussed, they will be purified and their sinful inclination for constant indulgence in illicit sex, meat eating, intoxication and gambling will have all become which have all become prominent in modern days. Although we purified of the sinful inclination, which have all become prominent in these days. Thus they become raised to the status of light, Punya Shravana Kirtana, simply by joining the kirtan. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And by hearing about Krishna and Bhagavad Gita, one must be purified, especially if he also takes prasad. This is all going on in the Krishna consciousness movement. And Prabhupada says here, another specific description here is Srinvan Bhagavato Bhikshnam Avatara Katamritam. It is not because one has once finished Bhagavad Gita, he should not hear it again. We should hear again and again. There's nectar, you know, eternal nectar. I always ask this question when I do a ceremony. I'll take out my Bhagavad Gita and I'll say, I'm just going to read a verse from the Bhagavad Gita before I do the ceremony. And I say, do you read the Bhagavad Gita? You know, and they they sort of look at each other and it says, oh, he did once, you know. Oh, yeah, I did, you know. And that's usually about the best, you know. That's about the best that you get. But, you know, some member of the family once, or, you know, grandmother used to do it, you know. I heard, you know, a few verses from her. But again and again. And that's what they used to do in India. You probably know better than I do. But, you know, but usually when I ask them, they all tell me their grandparents did. And that's what Prabhupada is saying here. You know, practically they all say that. Their grandparents did. They used to read it every day. And, you know, and if I do a Shraddha or something like that, I always read a chapter of the Gita and I say to them, if you read the Gita at least one verse a day, your grandparents that you're doing this Shraddha for will be very pleased with you, because that's what they did every day of their life. And they'd be very happy for you to follow that, what they did. So it's really, you know, decreased, you know, quite significantly. But that encouragement should be there. And it's one of the reasons why in every ceremony, no matter what the ceremony is, I always read a verse from the Gita, you know, just to show that example. This is what we do. No other book, you know, you'll only see me with the Gita. I read a verse from the Gita. This is auspicious. This is how easy it is. And that's all you need. Every ceremony like that. So, and of course, you know, our Krishna consciousness is reinvigorating the world with the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. So Narada Muni will be very happy. So while working to earn his livelihood as much as necessary to maintain body and soul together, one who is actually learned should live in human society unattached to family affairs, although externally appearing very much attached. So, of course, they can't be unattached if they're not associated with the spiritual master, the Vaishnava, and they're not hearing the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. So from here on, if they haven't done the first thing, they're not going to do any, you know. So it says, be unattached. Who's going to do that? You know, it's not going to happen. But the devotee, those who are associated with the Hare Krishna movement, you know, they hear the Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, they say, yes, let us, you know, I'm an eternal spirit soul. You know, I belong in the spiritual world. One day I'm going to die and give up this family. They hear that. And there's something better. So, you know, they can begin to do this. (Clears throat) An intelligent man in human society should make his own program of activities very simple. This verse here, it's very, very clever. You know, they should live in human society unattached to family affairs, although externally appearing to be very much attached. That's very important. Because somehow, I think over 40 years, I think a lot of devotees who read the Bhagavatam must have skipped over this one verse. Because they actually, a lot of devotees, previously in ISKCON, they, you know, fathers, mothers, they were externally very, showed a mood of detachment from each other and from family affairs and from their children. And it caused a lot of trouble to the children, you know, who were in the movement in those early days. You know, externally appearing very much attached means, you know, there should be the usual hugs and cuddles for children and between husband and wife, and, you know, friendship between friends, and civil dealings, nice dealings. All these pleasant things and proper etiquette, very warm and very friendly, it should be like that. That makes the path of spiritual life very relishable. And also, you know, it makes it relishable not only for the advanced devotees, but for people whose detachment may not be very strong. They've still got that nice, you know, they feel nice and comfortable in their family, in their home, like that. So it's very, very important that externally, you know, the all the usual things in family life go on. This is, you know, it's especially in the earlier days, you know, if men come to the you know, in the early days, there weren't many grihasthas. You know, that everyone lived in the temple, and even if they were grihasthas, they lived, you know, they had to live in the ashram, like. As when I was married, having my first child, still I had to live with the brahmacharis. And I asked the temple president, can I get a little flat, you know, just make my home a little bit more like, you know, a family? Because my wife was living downstairs in the garage. I used to build her a... it was a double garage, right? It was just cement garage. So we'd build her a wall of the books that we're going to distribute, and as we distributed the books, her room disappeared. That's family life in ISKCON in the early days. You know, so, you know, very difficult, you know, and you know, the children. So I'm living with the brahmacharis. You can't speak about your wife or your children. You know, they don't want to hear it. One time my wife and I had a little joke in the corridor, and she had a giggle. I got called into the temple president's office. This is in Perth. I called into the temple president's office. Gunga. We had complaints from the brahmacharis. You know, inappropriate behaviour with your wife in public. I go, really? What? You know, like, what did I do? You made your wife laugh in front of others. I says, is that it? Don't do it again. It's kind of hard there. So, you know, just to give you a few horror stories. One time we were doing padayatra with my spiritual master in New Zealand, the South Island. And sometimes we'd camp at a football ground, or sometimes at the beach, or what have you. Anyway, there was, and these are sort of typical things that went on. So I was in my tent, we'd finished the morning program, and it was just before, no, we hadn't actually, it was before the morning program, so it was quite early, it was before going to, you know, we're going to all go to Guru Puja. So I was in the tent talking with my family, and I heard this child, you know, perhaps about 2 years old, screaming his head off. And I thought, you know, there's like so many devotees out there, you know, someone's going to tent. He just screamed and screamed. I thought, oh, no one's going to go over there, you know. Like this went on for, you know, 5-10 minutes. I got up and I went out to see, you know, had been attacked by a drop bear or something. Anyway, I saw this child and his father, right, not some monster, but his father was giving, so this is like Christchurch, you know, freezing temperatures in the morning. Like there was frost on, icicles on the grass, you know. His kids sort of, you know, mostly naked, little copens, getting a cold bucket bath, right? Over and over again, not just once, but continually. And each time he's screaming. I said to the father, you know, what are you doing? You know, oh, he's got to learn. He's got to learn austerities, you know. He's got to learn to be detached, and you know, from the body. I'm saying he'll be detached from the whole ISKCON if you keep doing that, you know, which he did, and the father as well. But you know, these were common sort of things that would go on. Yeah, very common. So I remember as a brahmachari, we'd have class here in Melbourne, and I'd be sitting in class, and you know, there was a grihastha. I think he was separated from his wife, but he had a little child, probably about 4 or 5 years, little boy. So he'd be sitting in class, and the little boy would want to go to the toilet. And the father's like, you know, I'm listening to class. It's, you know, it's like, stop interrupting me, you know, this is important, I'm doing this for you. And the little kids, you know, so I'm a brahmachari, I'm thinking, you know, he's not going to take into the kid's going to, you know, embarrass himself in the temple room, so I'd have to go and take him to the toilet. As a brahmachari, I'd take him, you know. Otherwise, his father wouldn't. You know? So, you know, we don't want that sort of, you know. So externally, you know, this is a very important verse. We're getting instruction from Narada Muni, you know. Don't do that sort of behaviour, you know. Even if you're completely detached, family life should be family life, you know.
In what sense do we see this unattached to family members?
Well, unattached means that, you know, we know that, you know, that we are, you know, we will have to leave them all behind. You know, when we leave this body, if any of them die, you know, then we won't see them again in this life. If we die, we have to leave them. We have to leave our home. We have to leave all our possessions. There's nothing we can hang on to, you know. We may try to attach ourselves, but the nature of this world is, we can't attach ourselves permanently to anything. You know, we have to understand, you know, it's like if you're on a train, you strike up a friendship and they get off and, you know, or you're on a, they go one way and you go another way. You know, as much as you like the person, you think, you know, it could be a nice person to know, but, you know, you can't be attached, you know. You go your way, they go their way. And we're also not attached to the body, we're attached to the soul, because we understand, you know, as it says in the Gita, actually the person is invisible. We actually can't see each other. You know, I can't see you, you can't see me. I can see the body you're in, but I really can't see you. You're invisible to me. So I can't be attached to your body. That's not you. You know, I can be attached to the soul. There's nothing wrong with being attached to the soul of a person. You know, to like, because eternally we are related. But we shouldn't be attached to the bodily external situation, because that's not the person anyway. So that's an illusory attachment. So, you know, we can be attached to the spirit soul. But that attachment is not for personal sense gratification, but, you know, it's an attachment for out of affection and love. You know, you can actually have an affectionate relationship, you know, with the spirit soul. You'd like that to see that person go back to Godhead, and they'd like to see you go back to Godhead. They'd like to see you happy and protected in this world, like that. So, you know, so it's detachment from the illusory side of things, and detachment. You know, the attachment on the spiritual platform is fine.
But how do we actually do that practically? When we know that these are my family, and he's my father, she's my mother, and this is my family, and I need to take care of them.
Mm-hmm.
We are seeing them literally as part of us, rather than even they being themselves.
That's natural, yeah. You know, it's Prabhupada actually mentions that you know, it's natural for if there's so many children in a dangerous situation, you'll generally get your own child first. You know, where's my child? And then you try and save others. But you're going to go for your, you know, you look for your own child. You know, they're all in danger. You immediately go for your own child. You know, your wife, your husband. That's natural. It's a duty. And of course, there's nothing wrong in that. Because if each, you know, the person best suited to protect someone else, of course, is their parents, because they know, my child most likely won't run this way, they'll run that way, or they'll probably just sit and cry or whatever. So the best person to say that is their parents. So there's nothing wrong with, favouring, your own child. It's a natural thing. But, you know, detachment, you know, not being attached, means that our association with them is not for sense gratification. That's what detachment means, you know. We're married to such a person, we have these children, and we're not thinking, you know, my wife, my husband, my children, they're for my sense gratification. So we... Detachment means none of them are here for my sense gratification. They are my family, and naturally I favour them amongst other, you know, people. So that's natural. But they're not here for my sense gratification. For me to serve Krishna, I can help them also, you know, become nicely situated on the path back to Godhead. Creating those strong bonds of natural affection helps them to go back to Godhead. You know, if to maintain that. You know, especially when little children get to teenagers, they like to rebel against everyone and everything. But if you've got a really strong, you know, friendship, there's a very warm love, then even though they feel like rebelling, you know, that will just keep them, you know, that attachment will protect them, you know. So... So in other words, you can literally utilize the natural attractions within family life for everyone's spiritual life. Arjun used his natural ability as a warrior to protect the citizens and protect religious principles. So it was natural for Arjun. The things which are natural in family life, we can also use them in Krishna consciousness. See? So what was natural for Arjun, what's natural for a Brahmana, what's natural for a Vaishya, what's natural for a woman, what's natural for a man, we just use those natural things in a way that's an asset for Krishna consciousness. Arjun's fighting ability was an asset for Krishna consciousness. So the natural things that you do in a family, those family attachments and affections, they're natural. So, but and then just use them as assets for everyone's development in Krishna consciousness. That's what we're saying here. No one is asked in Krishna Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, what will oppression accomplish? That's in the third chapter. Repressing natural things, what does that accomplish? It doesn't accomplish anything. In all respects, whether one is whatever one's natural occupation and that which is natural and therefore and can then be used as an asset to serve Krishna, that's the way it should be done. Not by repressing things that are natural. So Kshatriyas should not repress their nature, Brahmins should not repress their nature, family people should not repress their nature. Those natural things go on, and yet one is detached because they understand. I'm not attached to the body, I'm attached to the soul, and these family members are not for my sense gratification, but we're all here to, please Krishna. So that's detachment. So it's a very important verse, and had devotees, properly studied Prabhupada's books instead of skimming over them or pretending that they know everything about it, we wouldn't have had all those problems, that those children and the wives, some of the women from the early days, they've got all these horror stories. It makes a bad reflection of ISKCON, but it's not actually ISKCON's culture. Srimad Bhagavatam is actually what we're supposed to be practicing, and Narada Muni says here, externally, very much attached. And there's nothing wrong with that if we're not looking at our family members. You're here for my sense gratification. We're all trying to serve Krishna together. And so let's do all the nice things that family people do. There's no reason why not to. And we have a long, we still have a long way to go as, it's only, there's one thing I notice is that there's sort of a, in this temple anyway, not every temple, but I don't often see, husband and wife like sitting in the courtyard talking to each other. No one home. Just us mice. You don't see it very often. I'm still, from previously getting chastised. I'm a bit scared to do it. But, it shouldn't be like that, we should be able to give a proper impression that that there should be a proper understanding of the devotees practicing this, that externally they can go about their natural family activities. And yet we understand that because of the way they're nice Vaishnavas, they're detached from the material aspect of it and completely. So that's a more mature, you know, community. But we've got a long way to go to get there.
I think it becomes difficult if you are externally attached. It becomes difficult to be unattached. Because whatever you be externally, just goes inside you.
We must hear the Srimad Bhagavatam Bhagavad Gita. If you hear the Srimad Bhagavatam Bhagavad Gita, the detachment will be there. But if the hearing and the chanting is not there properly, then the detachment will not be there.
Like many times we say, oh, I'm chanting, but I'm thinking of something else in my mind. The solution is keep chanting. It will eventually go in your mind. So whatever we do externally goes inside. And that's why if we are externally attached, internally we also become attached to the heavenly universe.
If we're not hearing and chanting properly. If we're not hearing and chanting properly, that's right, we have to be a little careful. But if we're hearing and chanting properly, and if you know devotees and they're hearing and chanting properly, means that they're doing it all the time, and that's their whole life is around hearing and chanting and helping others to hear and chant, and they're not committing Vaishnava aparad, which is a big one. That's a big test that they're hearing and chanting nicely. It's very nice to see them. There are some, a few examples in ISKCON, you know, where you got the husband and wife, just very friendly relationship, but their whole life's dedicated to, understanding and preaching Prabhupada's books, and yet they have a very nice relationship as friendly, as husband and wife, and it's good to see, it's good to see that. And so we need more of it.
You see that in the courtyard, you don't see husband, wife, family sitting together and talking.
Not as much as we should.
That's because that disturbs the brahmacharis.
Well, brahmacharis need to breathe the Srimad Bhagavatam.
Can I just...
So the brahmacharis, they have to go out on the street to see half-naked women and they have to preach. That's okay. But to come back to the temple to see devotees have been around 40, 50 years, husband and wife, talking nicely to each other, dressed in dhoti and sari, that should never happen. That's an imbalance. There's something wrong with that, right? If they can't see husband and wife have been around for many years, mature devotees sitting and talking to each other, then don't send them out on the street, because they're not going to last very long out there.
They're properly situated.
And do you know the history in ISKCON is that they haven't lasted. They need to see the positive alternative, And if you just send them out on the street, they can't see husband and wife sitting there, the devotees, nicely dressed, all covered up, chaste, just having a little chat with each other, and we say, go out in the street and, distribute Prabhupada's books to these half-naked people. What are we doing? What message are we, you can't do that, but do this extreme thing. You can't put your feet in lukewarm water, it's too cold for you, but go over to the icy pool and dive in there head first. Does that make sense? We're going to lose a lot of people. We have lost a lot of people. We have to mature.
receiving Bhagavatam.
Who's this?
Janaka Maharaj.
Yep.
Some soldiers came and said, your palace is burning, your palace is burning. But Janaka Maharaj did not know. So, is that a case of detachment that you're talking about? Yes, my family is there, but this is, I'm doing an important service, I'm hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. Because here we are talking about, in the Bhagavatam class, the time is wanting to go to the bathroom. But here we have Janaka Maharaj's example, where he's told that his palace is burning, but he didn't even move, he didn't budge.
Yeah, but Janaka, the father of Sita. Well, in the Bhagavad Gita, we know that the general behaviour of Janaka Maharaj was actually quite good. It mentions here in the Bhagavad Gita that. Verse 20 of the third chapter, that even kings like Janaka and others attain the perfectional stage by performance of prescribed duties. Therefore, just for the sake of educating the people in general, you should perform your work. It says kings like Janaka and others were all self-realized souls. So here's a self-realized soul. Consequently, they had no obligation to perform their prescribed duties in the Vedas, such as we're talking about Grihastha. Nonetheless, they performed all prescribed activities just to set examples for the people in general. So it actually states here that he did perform his usual family activities in a way that the common people would follow. So it's incorrect to think that he didn't because of one example where he may have become, you know, absorbed in ecstasy because of the Bhagavatam. But as a general rule, his life, he followed the principles that we're teaching here. Janaka was the father of Sita and and father-in-law of Lord Sri Ram. Being a great devotee of the Lord, he was transcendentally situated. But because he was the king of Mithila, he had to teach his subjects how to fight righteously in battle. He and his subjects fought to teach people in general that violence is also necessary in a situation where good arguments fail. So it says here that although one who is situated in Krishna consciousness may not have any interest in the world, he still works to teach the public how to live and how to act. Experienced persons in Krishna consciousness can act in such a way that others will follow, and this is explained in the following verse. So actually, Janaka Maharaj, out of all people, is given as one of the most experienced persons, devotees, on how to perform devotional service in such a way that the general mass of people who are attached can follow. So it's wrong to say that because of that one example. So, you know, this would be the case that, you know, where, you know, sometimes people, you know, may criticize a devotee that sometimes their transcendental attachment overrides the usual regulated activities that they're performing to, you know, to set the right example in family life and for people and for preaching. And they'll take that one example to criticize that devotee. Whereas, you know, actually they're acting in a very, you know, nice way, you know, day in, day out, year in, year out. That, despite their transcendental attachment. So we have to be a little careful there. And we also have to, you know, that's a mature understanding of a devotee. Here's a devotee that we see looks after their family so nicely. And making sure, you know, they've got a nice home and, you know, the wife is happy, the children happy, the husband is happy. The in-laws are happy, the parents. And one time, the devotee stays a little longer for the kirtan, or for the class. Oh, you know, these devotees, these Hare Krishna devotees, I'll never join ISKCON. You know, he should be at home, you know, or she should, you know. So that's, you know, we can't have, you know, that sort of good. In the Nectar Devotion it says, one should not offer criticism when there's a mountain of good. You see one little fault, and we all, there's a mountain of good. We don't see that. There just is a little fault. So,
seeing that as a good, that he can be detached, he doesn't care with the palace of being burned.
Yeah.
Now, seeing it as a good, that he could be so detached, he was so absorbed.
Yes, but it, you know, it shows, it does.
At that time,
yeah.
He's detached. But when he has to do his duty, he does it.
No. At that time, he's... Ordinarily, you'd get up and go and try and save your palace. That would be his duty. But because he's actually, a very spiritually advanced person, that transcendental attachment sometimes overrides everything. And when that does, there's no fault. For someone who's always setting the right example, and yet due to, you know, that spiritual transcendental ecstasy just overrides everything, all other, you know, lesser obligations in one sense, externals, then you know, there's no fault there. So it helps. That helps us to see that Janaka Maharaj. He's you know, there in the Gita as one who performed his prescribed duties perfectly to show everyone. Perfect family man, perfect husband, perfect father, perfect king, like that, everything perfect. And yet, one may think, oh, maybe he's not even on the transcendental platform at all. Maybe he's No. Then there are examples. Every now and then Krishna reveals, you may think he looks like an ordinary householder, but this is his, you know, the real transcendental nature of what's going on. So sometimes Krishna makes those arrangements and then we see, oh, you know, this is a very exalted person like that. So Krishna makes those arrangements. But we should not see fault in that. We should not see fault in them performing their prescribed duties and living beautifully in a family way. And we should not see fault in them when, you know, the transcendental ecstasies override everything else. Either way, you know, we should understand. We should have a very mature understanding of who, you know, Vaishnavas, mature Vaishnavas, and what, and you know, therefore, you know, we want to see that in ISKCON. We want to see that in ISKCON. We want to, that we see devotees in Grihastha Ashram living very nice, loving family lives. We want to see that, and there's no fault in that. And at the same time, occasionally, when those, you know, transcendental emotions override all their family duties, we're not going to criticize that either, because, you know, everything is in balance. And that, and as you see, how easy it is to, you know, find fault either way. Yeah? So there's a lot of maturing needs to be done in ISKCON. Anyway, let's leave it there. That's a nice little food for thought. We'll move on with the rest of them next week. Jai, Hare Krishna. I look forward to your discussions, your discussion topics, presentations. Thank you, Hare Krishna.
With the essays, is it again one per unit, or is it?
Okay.
With the essays, is it again one per unit?
One per unit. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, we've only got one chapter after this. You know, there's five chapters here. We've got to do 14 and 15, and then we're finished this unit, and then we're going to do the exams again. So, yeah. But, yeah, and we were discussing last week that, you know, eighth and ninth chapters, you know, you can move through them quite quickly, a lot quicker than what we move through here. So, yeah. So get in, get some practice, because we'll be doing a few of them. And then we'll probably, you know, the units will slow down a bit once we get to the 10th canto.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what is the sloka for the next unit? Will you just... So that we have enough time to memorize them.
Yeah,
so.
Okay. For this unit, can I tell you next week? You've got, what have you
I've
got?
I've got the file that you gave us last week. But
yeah, okay. So, Canto 7. Yeah, so, and for this unit, because we finish on chapter, you know, so it's from 11 to, so there's, what have we got this week? 7:12:1. 7:12:1. Yeah.
The one verse further.
Oh, we're going to do two, don't we? Oh, thanks for reminding me. I'm sure
last
all the students.
Last time was two. Last time.
Yeah, no, we've got to do two.
Two.
Yeah. Okay. So then let's do, you know...
7:12:1.
Yeah, 1 and 12:9.
Yeah.
So 12:1 and 12:9. So they're the ones...
12:1 and 9.
Yeah, that stopped?
Yeah, that stopped. I mean, it's so good.